Hey guys, and welcome to the Money Podcast. Now imagine this. You save $1,000 every month. You do it for 20 years. You earn 1% on those savings. After that 20 years is over, what do you got? $265,000. That's not bad. But what if you earn 10% instead of 1%? Then you'd end up with close to $700,000. Almost three times more, 2.5 times more. The point is this. When it comes to your savings, every percentage point counts. You need to earn as much as you can while taking as little risk as possible. And today's show is going to help you do just that. We're going to tell you what you need to know, answer your questions, give you some tips that are going to make you both smarter and richer. And we're going to do it without boring you to death in the process. I'm your host, Stacy Johnson. This podcast is brought to you by MoneyTalksNews.com, serving up the best in personal finance news and advice since 1991. As usual, my co-host will be financial journalist Miranda Marquette. Listening in and sometimes contributing is our producer, Aaron Freeman. And today we have our special guest, Roger Whitney, star of the Retirement Answer Man podcast and president of Agile Retirement Management. Roger, welcome to the show.
Hey, Stacy, Miranda, Aaron.
Yay.
I'm always happy.
Man, listen to the crowd.
Roger.
I love it.
I know. We have a really boisterous crowd with us today. Even though they're fictional, we love them. So
large audience, all wearing masks.
That's right. They're all wearing masks. That's right. So, Roger, here's my first question. Can I earn more than 0.1% on my savings account without risking my money?
Yes.
Thank you. Well, that'll be good. That's it for that show, folks. Thanks very much for tuning in. So, no, yeah, and I honestly, I actually do, I'm embarrassed to admit, have a significant sum in a money market account, both at a bank and at Vanguard, paying 0.1%. What should I be doing, Roger?
Well, there's not a lot of great answers. And I think stretching for yield is something that we've been doing for, it feels like a decade now because interest rates have been so low. So the easy coins that you can pick up are just simply to go look at, say, online banks. That's a good first step because it's not going to be 0.1%. It may be a whopping 0.5%, but yeah. That's free money if you're willing to deal with an online bank rather than, you know, your local credit union or your, you know, traditional bank.
You actually make a living. Part of your living is made by giving people financial advice, right, Roger? I mean, you're a retirement planner. Is that true?
Yeah. I work with about 85 clients, and we have these same decisions that we have to figure out how to navigate. And we oftentimes go look for where can we earn the best yield.
You must get this constantly, because I remember when I was a stockbroker, which is, you guys were probably not even a glint in your parents' eye yet. But all through the years, since I've been doing 30 years, I've been doing personal finance news, and people say, hey, I need to make more than this on my money. Oh, by the way, I can't take any risk at all, which of course doesn't work. But I can't imagine being a financial advisor now, Roger, and earning nothing. You can't earn anything on safe investments. And people must, and if you're retired, you really need to do that. You can't put all your money in the stock market because it's too risky, right?
Exactly. And well, we have to define risk. Usually when people talk about risk, like you're talking about, Stacy, it's losing money, right? Which is market, something goes down tomorrow and my money is worth less and I'm going to need it. Well, when you're in retirement, that's definitely a major risk. But the other risk is the one that we don't think about very often, which is inflation, right? And that's like on the other side of the teeter-totter. And there's a tension between I can't lose it today, but I want it to be worth at least the same amount tomorrow, meaning maybe 10, 20 years. So when you talk about risk, you have to figure out which one you're talking about. So like right now we're talking about how do I earn just a penny or a dollar more without losing it? And there aren't any great options. Usually the options I would go down is, you know, obviously go to the online banks and survey and find them. And I end up doing that with clients as well. And we end up tiering money out to different banks. If you have a 401k, a good place to keep safe money that you don't want to lose, but you want to earn a little bit of interest might be their stable value funds, which is unique to a qualified plan. And another place, especially if you're over 59 and a half or it's IRA assets, and this is a place most people don't think, is what's called a MIGA, multi-year guaranteed annuity. We used to call it fixed annuities, I think, Stacy.
Yes.
And a good example today, depending on what state you're in, you know, if you're going to earn 0.1%, say at a local bank, like you've mentioned, you can get a 3-year MIGA, multi-year guaranteed annuity, and get about 2.5%.
And by the way, just for those out there who don't know what the heck Roger's talking about, think of an annuity like this as just a CD. It just comes from an insurance company rather than a bank. No FDIC insurance, but if you get a high quality insurance company, you're just basically getting a 2.5%, 3-year CD. Is that accurate, Roger? I don't want to put words.
Yeah, essentially. And the key is it's locked up. So these are the type of instruments you would not want to get money out of because they have very significant back end charges if you were to take the money out early.
Did you say 3 years?
3 years.
Yeah, because back in the day when I was doing this, and I was actually the annuity coordinator for E.F. Hutton, if you're old enough to remember who the hell they were.
I'm listening.
Yeah, there you go. Uh-huh. But they, it was more like an 8-year, 9-year lockup on the money on those fixed annuities.
Yeah, with the MIGAs, the shortest that I've seen anyway are 3 years. So that's generally what we'll look at doing with a client. And you're essentially locked in for 3 years. And then at the end of 3 years, you can take your money and your interest. And because it's an annuity wrapper, if you're under 59 and a half, you could have some issues. So you'd probably want to use this if you're over 59 and a half.
Yes, you're right. And I am, yeah. So that's good for me.
Yeah.
But
essentially, it acts like a CD, yeah, as you say. Yeah.
So just shopping rates. And as a matter of fact, just last night, my in-laws are in town, and my mother-in-law was telling me she's got a Marcus account with Goldman Sachs. Marcus is a company owned by Goldman Sachs, a bank.
Right.
And she's earning 0.5%, and I'm earning 0.1. So this is an FDIC-insured account. 5 times what I'm making now. Granted, not much money either way. But nonetheless, if you can make 5 times the money, wouldn't you do it? So shopping rates is one thing. We have a way to do that on our website. I don't know if you do also, Roger, but we have a tool that helps you find the best savings account rates. Now,
and that's the kind of thing, the banks count on inertia, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
The money is sitting there and you know it's annoying, but the idea of opening up a new account and then transferring the money over, and the bigger traditional banks are the ones that have all the money and they play off of that inertia. And conversely, the online banks that can be found through a tool like yours, Stacy, they're vying for your money and they don't have all the overhead. So they're trying to entice you.
Word of caution, though, I was looking into an online bank and because it was this advertisement of a high interest rate on their savings account. But once we looked into the fine print, it was only for like, I don't know, 5 months. And then that interest rate dropped. And then there was a bunch of fees and all kinds of stuff tacked onto it. And this was blatant advertising to try to get you in there. So, I mean, word of caution about reading the fine print when it comes to those things.
Good point. Yeah. Good point.
And along with that, another thing you want to pay attention to as well is that a lot of these with the higher APY are also going to come with minimums. You know, so you have to have like a minimum that you're going to maintain in there. You have to have an average daily balance. So there's a lot of things that come with these higher rates. And so, as Roger was saying, you kind of have to find that balance between, okay, more money versus what am I going to have to do to get that more money?
Yeah. Now, let me ask all three of you guys, because I really have not done this, at least not enough to be qualified to speak on it. Have you actually moved money into one of these online banks, or they're also credit unions, whatever? In other words, what I'm asking you is this: how hard is it to move my money from where I am now to some other bank? Does it take 2 minutes? Does it take 3 days?
So the last time I did something like that was back in 2007 or something. So like I moved it into a place and they were paying like 5%. And it's actually just stayed there. It was actually ING back in the day. And then, you know, through all of the years now, it's now a Capital One account. It pays much lower, a much lower yield now. But I don't keep a lot of, so I actually do a tiered approach to my emergency fund. So I actually don't keep a lot of cash on hand beyond what I would need for, you know, 4 to 6 weeks of expenses, and instead put my money, most of the money in that's for my emergency fund, into bond funds and dividend funds. So I don't actually keep enough cash around for it to make a huge difference for me, but I am also much younger.
Oh God, you have to bring that up every single podcast.
Just, I have a higher risk tolerance.
let's stop calling this the Money Podcast and just call it the Miranda's Younger Than Stacy Podcast.
Let's do it. No, but I did it once, but it's not something that's been very useful for me, because a lot of the time, you know, like Aaron says too, a lot of the time these are promo rates that go away after a few months. So you go through the trouble of moving your money, and then 5 months later, 6 months later, you got to move it again.
Well, you know, go ahead.
Are we talking about the fear of being on top of the market, and the market might go down, and or inflation, and we're moving money into savings accounts? Is that what we're talking about?
Well, we're talking about just keeping your money, your safe money, the money you don't want to take a lot of risk on, trying to earn as much as you can.
And let's talk about chasing yield.
Yeah. Well, and we're going to talk about going up the risk ladder a little bit, but we're starting here, just getting the best interest rate you can on your savings. And while I have not opened an online bank account, I have opened online brokerage accounts in the not too distant past, and it was not hard to do. It was pretty easy. So, you know, especially if the money is significant, it may make sense to shop those rates. Easy to do. Takes 2 minutes. And then if you find something you like better, read the fine print to make sure you're going to get the deal that you're being promised. And then put some money into a higher yielding savings account. And actually, I thought about doing this recently. Roger, tell me what you think of this idea. I thought about, I own my house free and clear. I thought about taking out a giant loan on it. Because if interest rates rise, I could arbitrage it. In other words, if I could borrow money at 2.5% and earn 4.5%, which I can't now, but you know, if interest rates do go up, you know, that's a 2% arbitrage. You know, on $1 million, you're making some money. That's a risky idea, but it's possible. What do you think?
Well, it is a little bit of a risky idea, and I guess I just made the same decision in reverse, Stacy, because I just refinanced my house at 30 years at 2.56%.
That's
which is
great.
Insane.
Yeah, insane.
And at the time I was like, the decision was, do I pay it off? Because I could have paid it off, or do I refinance? And I chose to refinance. So I essentially did the same thing that you just mentioned.
Yeah.
In the thinking. And the way that the direction that you're coming from just sounds riskier than the way that I did it, even though it's the same thing.
Yeah. And you know, and one of the ideas I had that I was going to bring up today too was paying down high cost debt. Because the reason I'm free and clear on my house is because I had a 4.75% mortgage on it, and as interest rates dropped to virtually nothing, I said, "Well, what the hell? I mean, I'm earning 4.75% by simply paying off this mortgage."
Right. And I think that's very good logic. Yeah, definitely. And I think the one danger in paying off a house, especially with rates where they're at, is one thing that we don't factor in a lot is optionality. When you pay off, say, a big mortgage, or if I were to pay off my mortgage, I lose that liquidity from my balance sheet. And now I have less optionality, meaning I have less liquidity. And that's one thing liquidity buys you, having lots of cash. Even if you're earning 0.1% like you are, Stacy, that money gives you options which will either protect you when the world hits you the wrong way, or give you liquidity to take advantage of an opportunity if it arises. So the return sometimes on liquidity is asymmetric. It's not what you earn, it's when you have it and you need it.
Yes, opportunity. You know, and in fact, I'll tell you a story about that exact thing after we take a quick break. We have to pay the bills, folks. We'll be right back after this. Okay, we're back. So we were talking about keeping some liquidity in order to take advantage of situations that might arise. I just did this in 2012, maybe. I still had the mortgage, didn't pay it off, kept money in the money market. And my next door neighbor, who was a friend of mine, he died. He was an older man. And I bought his house for cash and fixed it up. I bought it for $360,000, went in with a friend of mine. We both put up the money, and we sold it for $625,000 a couple of years later. And I couldn't have done that had I not had the liquidity, because you weren't at that time, you couldn't borrow money. I mean, nobody was lending mortgage money. So I had that money, was able to make money with it. But if you're not going to do something like that, if you don't see any opportunity where you're not going to take any, you know, use that money for anything, then you might be better off paying off that debt.
Yeah, I think that's a great example. I think that's a great example.
Okay, cool. Now, what else? What else can we do? We're shopping our savings. That was okay. I went from 0.1 to 0.5, but that didn't really blow my skirt up. What else can we do to make a little more money on our savings? Maybe take a little bit more risk. What else can we do?
Well, I think you have to define it by time frame. And honestly, Stacy, in retirement, which is where I deal, that's where my mind is all the time, there's really not a lot else. There's not a lot in between, because even if you go out to a 3 or 4 year CD, you're not going to get significantly more. And usually when someone is in retirement, they're going to need the money in year 3 or 4 to pay for their lifestyle, because people aren't living off dividends these days.
Yeah. And how does that work? I mean, if, you know, when my parents were retired, Roger, they were in T-bills. I mean, almost exclusively. They had, you know, a few hundred shares of a stock, but they basically had hundreds of thousands of dollars in T-bills, and they just rolled them over. You know, they lived on their retirement. They were very simple folk. But they got to where, you know, they were earning 8%, and now you're earning nothing. I mean, literally nothing. And your clients must be freaked out about that. The money's just sitting there. You don't want to put it in the market because it's too risky, but they're earning nothing. And they don't call you all the time and say, what the hell?
Well, I think you have to think about how you invest differently in retirement now. It's because I've been doing this, you know, 25 plus years. So I remember talking about 6.5% money market rates, and now it's nothing. When you're investing in retirement, it's, and you don't have a pension and you can't live off the interest, it becomes much more of an asset liability matching exercise, which means I have assets that I match with liabilities. So and what would be a liability in retirement? Which, even if you're debt-free, you have liabilities. Let's say you have to spend $100,000 3 years from now to live your life. Well, that's a liability because that's a debt that you have to pay back in 3 years. You just happen to owe it to yourself. And so the way that we've been navigating it, Stacy, is building income floors. So we pre-fund retirement consumption for a minimum of 5 years using CDs, fixed annuities, individual bonds, if we can find them. Even those aren't that attractive. So we pre-fund life for the first 5 years. And then that allows us to build the rest of the assets more to growth assets. So you end up with doing what's called a barbell. You don't really have a lot in the middle. You have a lot of liquidity and you have investment risk from a volatility standpoint.
Or this is what are Miranda's favorites, the bucket strategy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's similar. It's a little different, but yeah. I like to use the bucket strategy when I'm thinking about what money I'm going to need in the coming years. And I don't do it for my own stuff, but I did do it with my son's 529 with his college investment portfolio. Since he's getting close to college.
Yeah, perfect example. We affectionately call it the pie cake, which is much more delicious.
The pie cake?
It sounds way more delicious.
Sounds fattening.
Well, yeah, I guess it could be. Well, the pie cake is essentially you're layering your money on top of each other based on the time frame that you need it. And each layer is a different asset allocation or a pie chart. So there's the pie and then the cake.
I get it. Now, let me ask you something. I should have brought this up a long time ago when we first started this conversation. Are you putting your clients in bonds? Knowing interest? Well, I'm not knowing. We can assume that interest rates might be heading a little higher, right? And we don't want to go into bonds when interest rates are going up. Or do we? Do we just stay in bonds and not worry about it? What are you advising your clients, Roger?
Well, it depends on what you're thinking bonds are for. So first off, on the issue of interest rates going up, I've had this discussion for 15 years. Our interest rates are about to go up. Inflation's about to spike. Actually, I would say 20 years. So yes, they will go up. When that is, I have no idea. So yes, we are. Yes, it depends on where we're at in the layer of the cake. So
you are putting people in bond funds as we speak?
Yes.
Okay. But relatively short term, or you just... pretending like interest rates don't exist and you're just using, you know, doesn't matter whether they're up, down, or sideways, you're going to do these types of bond funds.
Using well-diversified intermediate term.
Okay. That makes sense. So intermediate term bond funds are bonds that mature 5 to 10 years out. Is that accurate?
Yeah, we'll have a duration of right around 6 or 7 years.
And so a person listening to this, if they wanted to go into bonds, they could look for an intermediate term bond fund from someone like Vanguard or their ETFs, I'm sure. Now, see, I've ignored bonds totally myself. I've stayed in money market, which obviously has been disastrous. Had I been in bonds, I'd have made money as interest rates went down. But I literally have not bought bonds ever, hardly.
So essentially, you have a barbell, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. You have a lot of liquidity, and then you have a lot of risk.
Okay, now let's talk about dividend-paying stocks, because this is something I am interested in. Obviously, I know we're going up the risk ladder here, but there are companies that – let me tell you a stock I bought not that long ago was Verizon. Verizon is – you know, they pay a decent dividend. I want to say 5% of where I bought it anyway. I paid 50 for it. And they pay 5%. So there's a situation where I could borrow money against my house for 2% and put it in Verizon for 5%. Is that risk-free? Absolutely not. It's a company. Companies can go bankrupt. But Verizon's pretty safe. And there are lots and lots of other companies out there that have been paying dividends for 20 years, 50 years even, that are relatively safe. What do you think about that as a strategy?
I think that's a great strategy as you move out the risk scale. You know, when we say Verizon is going to pay you money just to own them, I think at current prices, the dividend yield's about 4.3%, which is a great yield, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot more. But
I'm up 20% on the stock too, you know. But
well, that's just randomness, right? Because you could easily be down 20%, right?
Yeah, it's true.
So it's definitely up the risk scale from a CD or a fixed annuity where you need to have money at a certain date. This would be a kind of portfolio you'd have for something that it's at least, you know, at least a 5-year time frame. That you don't care what it does in between. I think those are great ideas.
And you do this for your, you know, if you're advising a client, do you say to them, let's get a nice fat ETF? In other words, we're going to get a portfolio of dividend stocks. Or do you say, it just depends on how much money they have, you might say, let's buy these 15 dividend stocks.
When we get up the risk scale, we're buying first the target pie allocation, and then we will lean a little bit more towards companies that are yielding dividends are more friendly to their shareholders, which is essentially paying out dividends. And then we're reinvesting those dividends typically. We're not using it as income.
Yeah, I started buying dividend stocks. I'm 65. I started buying dividend stocks, well, in 2009. So I knew that my retirement would be looming one day, and I wanted to get stocks that might pay me a dividend when I retired. So I started buying, accumulating shares of stocks, some oil stocks, some other stocks that paid decent dividends and had for a long period of time. And those dividends have increased over the years. And obviously, I've been using them to buy more shares because I don't need the money now. So, you know, if you're that 50-ish, you might start looking at some dividend stocks, keeping in mind, of course, that there anything in the stock market does have some risk to it. But there's plenty of info out there on good dividend stocks. You can just look up top dividend stocks. Kiplinger often produces good lists of those.
When you're looking at dividend stocks too, Stacey, I think it's important not to look at the yield as the determining factor.
Great point.
Because there are a lot of companies that will have great yields that have hollowed out insides as a company. I would prefer to buy, say, a lower dividend yielding stock with a company that generates lots of free cash flow and has had a history of increasing their dividend. I think that's more attractive, at least to me, than a high yield.
Right on. Yes, you're absolutely right. I look for companies that have grown their dividends and that can cover their dividends. If they're paying out a dollar, you want them to be making at least $2. I mean, they want to make sure they're making plenty of money. And things can go awry. Like I said, I owned oil stocks. I bought ConocoPhillips back in 2009. And guess what happened? Oil went to, you know, actually oil went to negative last year for a little while. But anyway, they cut their dividend. So these things can happen, which is why you get diversified, why you understand what the heck you're investing in, and why you look at the quality of the company before the return on the dividend. Correct?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, you're right on the industry, because like if you look at an Exxon, you mentioned Conoco, but Exxon has always been a quality company with great cash flow. It is now, but the stock has been horrible. So, you know, diversification even into different sectors is one reason why you might look at an ETF or some kind of portfolio that spreads that risk across the economy.
Now, what about, I'm going to ask one more other thing, and you guys are also welcome, Aaron and Miranda, to throw your questions in too. But what about peer-to-peer lending? I've thought about doing that. It seems a little time intensive, so I've never done it. But this is where you're lending money. What are the companies that do that? I can't even think of one right now. Prosper is the one I was trying to think of. So you can lend money to people. You can lend, you know, $10 to 300 people. You know, so it's really spread out. And you also get a risk profile of the people you're lending to. Obviously, the people who are the riskiest pay the most interest. So have you ever done that, Miranda? Or I'm sure you've done research on it before, done stories.
Yeah. No, actually, I have. I actually have a lending club account, and I have over the years just. I don't put a lot of new money in there, but every time, like the new, I have it set up to automatically reinvest in new notes every time I get payments. And so,
oh, so you've done this.
Yeah. So it just sort of keeps going. And every time I check and I'm like, oh, well, I guess I've got money in there. That's nice.
What kind of interest rates do you earn on that?
I usually get a return of somewhere between 4% and 6%. So it's not super sexy, but it's, you know, pretty consistent. And, you know, through the, you know, it makes you feel pretty good. It makes you feel better than the savings account. That's for sure. So,
you're lending obviously to the highest quality borrowers.
So I actually have them do mine usually notes within the B range, not the A credit range, but the B credit range.
Wow. I think you can get a higher interest rate than that then.
It's not super amazing, even the B range. So the thing that's interesting about it is, I've done stuff in the A range before, and most of the ones that are defaulted were in the A range, which is really weird when you think about it.
That is really weird. So we're nearing the end of our time, but let me recap and see if you guys, maybe this will, bring up something somebody else wants to talk about. But we've got shopping your savings. Oh, also, you know, one thing we didn't mention in that, one thing you can do too is you can look around for people that are paying bonuses. Like sometimes, you know, if you put in $5,000, they'll give you a $100 bonus in some bank. And you can just search the internet. In fact, we publish these sometimes at Money Talks News. But, you know, so-and-so is doing a bonus for opening an account. And that adds to your interest that you're earning. So if you're willing to move around a little bit, you might be able to get some deals that way. Okay, so we've got shopping your savings. We've got dividend-paying stocks. We've got paying down high-cost debt. Touched on peer-to-peer lending. We talked about bonds. Laddering, having some short-term and some long-term. So is this basically how you approach this with your clients, Roger? These things?
Well, I think when it comes to safe yield, it is to a point. I don't like to, I like a duck to be a duck. I don't want to make a duck into a swan in the sense of, and it's very easy. Yes, that was quick. It was very easy. It's very easy to do that when you're stretching for yield. So the way you would do that in bonds is start to go down the credit scale, right? To mm-hmm, go to... Mm-hmm. You know, floating rate preferreds and high yield. And the way you do that in money markets is something we just talked about is personal lending, which may have a place, but it starts to get more stock-like in that it can go really wrong if it goes wrong. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my only caution would be is to, if it's supposed to be reserves or liquid money, don't try to get too fancy with it because that's what you have your risk assets for. This is the money that's supposed to be there, and the return will be that asymmetric risk when you really need it.
Cool. That makes a lot of sense. And you know, another thing that I would worry about were I a financial advisor too, is that when people can't get any yield, that they're too tempted to go in the stock market and take too much risk.
Definitely. Definitely.
I bet people are doing that a lot too. But you remember in 2008, you know, when everybody had their hat handed to them in the stock market, and a lot of people who were about to retire had 90% of their savings in stocks because they weren't paying attention. They weren't discounting the risk that's involved in the stock market.
And so one thing we haven't even talked about, which we may not have time for, I guess, is you saw a lot of people then, as you do sort of now, well, I might as well, why don't I just go buy a house and I'll buy an income property and I won't have to do anything and I'll just get mailbox money.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it works until it doesn't work. It's something you don't necessarily want to use with your safe assets.
Yes. Yeah. So, and I can tell you from my little story about buying the house next door, there's no, and I've owned lots of other rental property over the years for that matter. There's no such thing as rental property where you're not working your butt off. I mean, even if you pay somebody else to do the work, you're still working your butt off. I mean, it's just, it's not risk-free management. I mean, it's
yeah, I can attest to that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Aaron's a rental property owner, but not an easy thing to take care
of. Well, I'm confused about something. So you guys telling me, okay, well, savings account, earning money on savings account, like 0.45% or 0.5% in comparison to what Miranda just said, that you're earning 4% on your peer-to-peer lending. How is that not a win?
Because of the risk involved and because of the time involved or the management. Well, I don't know about the time. It seems like it's harder than putting money in a bank account, but the risk mainly, Aaron.
Yeah, and I've had a few client instances where they were in something similar and it went bad. And it's one of those things that becomes much more binary. When it goes bad, it goes really bad.
Yeah. But you can diversify among a bunch of people when you're doing that lending,
true.
Right? But I've never done it. Miranda said she has, and she's okay with it. Right?
Yeah. I have a fairly high like risk tolerance for some of this stuff. You know, I'm happy to have stock ETFs. A lot of them are dividend ETFs, and they automatically reinvest any dividends that I get. Because I'm not in the income, right? I'm not in the phase of my. I'm still in very much an accumulation phase of my, I don't know, wealth building.
You mean because
journey.
You're young? Is that what you're trying to say?
I'm just saying I'm in the accumulation phase.
And I'm in distribution phase. I get that. I'm actually still accumulating myself. So there. Okay. Anybody have anything else?
Well, you guys saying it's unwise to keep your money in the stock market right now?
Well, it's unwise to have too much podcasts, of your money in the stock market.
You guys have gotten me into the stock market. Because remember in our first future podcast, I'm like, oh, I've never done the stock market. It's scary to me and I don't understand it.
You mean
and
you then, took that seriously?
Yeah. So in all of this, even though I think it's the height of the market, you convinced me to throw some money into it and I did. And I'm biting my nails on it because I don't know. Oh,
no,
a good
look,
idea
you know
or
what,
not.
It's
going to
drop.
Thing,
I mean, it's going to drop. You just
is it because everybody's saying, "Oh, the world's going to come. The world's all going to come back, and there's going to
be
eventually
come
demand
back.
Everywhere."
Well,
listen,
yeah,
I'm glad you
mean,
said that, Aaron. Because let me tell you something, and I bet you Roger will back me up on this. You ever find yourself biting your nails? You got too much money in the market, my friend. You should never be afraid.
Well, I didn't put that much in there.
Well, then stop biting your nails.
Yeah, it means you either have too much or you're not. You don't understand what you're in and why, right? Because if you think of the stock market, I think historically it's had a 10% correction or more every 18 months, and then every 5 or 6 years it'll have a 20% correction. And I think learning what kind of it's like if you're at the amusement park. Understanding what kind of ride you're getting on before you're on it. There's nothing worse than thinking you're on the teacup ride and you're on, a huge roller coaster.
Right. And I know that this is the height. So I was like, well, I'll put a little bit in all these things that I think are good things. And then if it drops, I'll buy more. That was the thinking that
and
I
that's,
had.
That's great thinking.
Yeah, that is. That is. You should, I'm assuming you're young, not like Stacy or me. you should hope it goes down. Because you have time and you're adding. And that actually statistically or mathematically, it works in your favor if it goes
absolutely
down.
Right. And by the way, Roger, I think that Aaron was biting his nails before any stock investing. I think he's just a nail biter.
In general, okay.
There's nubs.
That explodes.
Okay, guys. Listen to Roger's podcast. It's awesome. He is a rock star and a stock star. The Retirement Answer Man is the name of his podcast. You can get a link to it in our show notes or just look it up. He's also got the Agile Retirement Management Company. He's the president of, right, Roger? President of
yes.
Agile Retirement Management?
Yes, I am.
Their website's agileretirementmanagement.com. Find links to lots more info in our show notes. And remember, if your goal is to make more, to spend less, to retire rich, your online home is moneytalksnews.com. And don't forget to check out Miranda's online home as well. That's Miranda Marquit, MARQUIT.com. If you appreciate what we do, do something for us. Subscribe to our podcast. Takes you 2 seconds. Really helps us. So if you like us, show us and subscribe. I'm Stacy Johnson.
And I'm Miranda Marquit.
And I'm Aaron Freeman.
And I'm Roger Whitney.
Thanks for hanging out with us, guys. And we're going to see you right here next time.